Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode 401. First things first, I want to give a shout out to From Darkness to Light, a blog that's out there. You know, I don't know who's behind it. A anonymous brother. And his blog post was kind of a congratulations on 400 episodes. And it was really touching. I just want to tell that brother, thank you so much. It means so very much. I think I posted something along the lines of my heart exploded when I read it. Very touching. So, if you have a chance to check out From Darkness to Light, it's a newer blog. I think there are posts that go back to April. And I think you should check it out. It's a really good blog. It has some unique perspectives. I'm still trying to put it together and see where we are with it, but just great. Various thoughts, and I recommend it. I've shared a few of the articles on the Whence Came You Facebook page, so anybody out there who is a follower of ours on social media, whether that be Twitter or Facebook or Tumblr or YouTube. And so speaking of YouTube, if you have not gone to our YouTube channel, go to YouTube and search Whence Came You with a question mark or WCY podcast. You'll see our channel. We've got 502 videos now. So if you could head on over there, give us a subscribe and never be left out when we publish a new episode or post a new video from illustrious Brother Harrison. All of those things are all there for you. A quick note, you're going to hear about it in a few moments, about the Great Books program. Enrollment window is happening now. So go on over there, and if you want to be smarter and book smart, that's the program for you. So check it out. Brother Scott Hambrick runs that, and it is fantastic. So again, you'll hear about it in a minute, but the enrollment window is happening. So let's get on over there and sign yourself up. And just one more thing before we get into our advert. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, hover over more, click on Franklin's Fortune, and read about the card game that's getting kids off of Fortnite. That's right, Family Game Night is back. And not just for mindless fun. It's fun and you're learning amazing things and virtues. Some would even say Masonic virtues. So check out that game. The details are all there. Use coupon code WCY. We'll get $5 off your order. And you're helping out a brother. You're helping out this show. And you're helping yourself. So this week we've got a number of great things happening. We've got a few papers that are just fantastic. I've also got a segment from illustrious Brother Harrison on the Masonic Minute that you're not going to want to miss. So stay tuned. We're going to get right into all of that right after this. Now comes the point in the show where I ask you to help support this show. How do we do that? Well, we have a bunch of different ways to do that today. If you head on over to WCYpodcast.com, you can click on direct donation through PayPal. Of course, you can make that one-time donation, or you can sign up to be a monthly contributor. Contributing $2 a month, $5, or even $10 a month, whatever you choose, really helps the program out. Of course, we have a limited edition shop where you can pick up any number of items that come direct from us. Help us out by going to MasonicRevival.com, but also we have some other affiliates that are really important. Banker's Best, one of the most unique things we've ever done, is to work with Brother Levi Banker out of St. Louis, who owns his own company called Banker's Best Beard and Skincare. He's been so generous. If you head to WCYpodcast.com, click on More, then click on Banker's Best, and you can check out a bunch of the different products he's got. He's got a whole line of beard care products, skin care, oils, balms, all of this stuff, and he has been doing it a long time. He knows a lot about it. Everything is handmade, quality items. We even came up with the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Balm, which is a few years old now, but remains one of the great products that he still offers. Even the artwork on the bottle was done by a brother. The nice thing about this particular product is 50% of the proceeds come back to the program. If you're a history guy like me, then you'll be pleased to know that what makes the beard oil and balm very special is that it was made utilizing the fragrances specific to the exports of King Solomon's time and location, which is amazing. So black fig and honey is the formula. Luxurious scent, as Levi says, truly fit for our first Grand Master. If you use the promo code BBWCY357 at checkout, you'll also get a little bit of a percentage off. Please check that out. Banker's Best, or just head on over to buybankersbest.com. And of course, it's business time. The book that I wrote with John T. Ruart, it is making some real waves, and people are using it and seeing success. So check that out on Amazon. You can click right to it. You can get it on Audible, Kindle, or in print, even on iBooks. And last but not least, I want to ask you to check out the Great Books program. You'll see the banner for it on the left-hand side, Intellectual Linear Progression. Use the promo code WCY, or you can just click on that link there, and you'll actually go right to the website and hear a little bit from Scott Hambrick about how awesome the program is. So that's it. I hope you guys enjoy, and thank you so much for helping us out. All right, now the first piece I've got for you all this week is a short talk bulletin, volume 12, coming back from 1934, January, so number one. And it's titled Ritual Differences. Now, I have read a few short talk bulletins in the past regarding ritual, but never this paper. And yet again, it's by unknown. And I'm starting to wonder if the place where I pulled these from says they're by unknown to avoid any kind of legalities, but they are listed as by unknown, so it's interesting. But without further delays, Ritual Differences by Unknown. An experience in Freemasonry, usually upsetting the newly raised brother, is his first visit to a lodge in another jurisdiction than his own. Having carefully been taught a certain ritual, in all probability with positive emphasis upon the necessity of being letter perfect, he learns with a distinct shock that the ritual in other states differs from his own, and these differ each from the other. If he converses with those quote-unquote well-informed brethren who will always be as ready to give as you will be to receive instruction, he is more than apt to be met with a puzzled, I don't know, I'm not sure why they're different from us, but of course, ours is correct. The typical things you hear. The riddle that becomes much plainer as the neophyte studies Masonic history, but alas, many never open a Masonic book. Yet divergences in ritual cannot be understood without some historical background. It is necessary to understand, for instance, that Freemasonry came to this country sometime prior to 1731 at a time when English ritual was in a process of formation. We did not receive our Masonry from one central source, but from several, nor did we obtain it as a whole. Several different localities, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Virginia, received Freemasonry from across the sea, and from them our forms and ceremonies radiated to other sections. The schism in the First Grand Lodge in England, 1753, resulted in two Grand Lodges, the Ancients, the younger schismatic body, and the Moderns, the older, original Grand Lodge. Each had its own ritual. Our rituals sometimes lean to one, sometimes to the other, and often to both. Literal ritualism is comparatively a modern matter, and quote-unquote mouth-to-ear in the early days meant nothing more than giving of information, not transmitting it in a set a form of words. Most of our Grand Lodges have been formed by a union of particular lodges, many of which receive each ritual from a different source, with the result that the ritual finally adopted is a combination of several. And finally, Grand Lodges have not infrequently changed, added to, and taken from their own rituals, either as a matter of legislation or by the easier course, in the early days, of adopting with little or no question the variations suggested by positive-minded ritualists, grand lecturers, custodians of the work, ritual committees, and so on. Some of these, unfortunately, had little or no Masonic background and changed and altered, added and subtracted, with no better reason than, quote-unquote, this seems much better to us. Certain fundamentalists are, to all intents and purposes, the same in every one of our 49 grand jurisdictions. All American lodges have a master and two wardens, a secretary and a treasurer, an altar with a volume of sacred law, and the other great lights. 3 degrees, unanimous ballot required, make masons only of men, have the same substitute word given in the same way, are tiled, have a ceremony of opening and closing, to some extent all dramatize and exemplify the master's degree, although the amount of drama and exemplification differs widely. But beyond these and a few other simple essentials are wide variations. Aprons are worn one way in one degree in one jurisdiction and another way in the same degree in another. Some jurisdictions have more officers in a lodge than others. In some jurisdictions, lodges open and close on the master mason degree only, others on the first degree, others only in the degree to which it is to be worked. Lesser lights are grouped closely about the altar, some in the stations of the masters and wardens. In some lodges, the IPM, or the immediate past master, plays an important part, as in England. Other lodges know him not. Some lodges have inner guards and two masters of ceremonies. Others will have none of these. Dividing, lettering, symboling are almost as various in practice as the jurisdictions. Obligations show certain close similarities in some requirements, but what is a part of the obligation in one jurisdiction may be merely an admonition in another, and vice versa. Discovering all this and much more, the thoughtful initiate is apt to wonder why it is deemed so important that he memorize his own particular work so closely. When he travels and he finds that he knows as familiar words and forms and phrases are strange to the lodge that he visits. Not is this the place to argue for purity of the ritual as taught. There are good and sufficient reasons why we should hand on to our sons and their sons the ritual as we received it, if only to preserve without further alteration and change that which was formed by the fathers. Suffice it that while uniformity in work within a jurisdiction is fairly well established and as good American Masonic practice, it is not universal. There are several workings, for instance, permitted in English lodges and even in some American jurisdictions, like Connecticut. Not all lodges use the same ritual. The reasons for all this are so involved, complex, and cover such a long period that a complete understanding is difficult even for the student willing to read the enormous amount of history and authority which may make it plain. Briefly, and in general, the matter becomes clearer if we visualize our sources of ritual. We received masonry from the Mother Grand Lodge of England, 1717 to 1753. The Grand Lodge of the Ancients, 1753 to 1813. The Grand Lodge of the Moderns, 1753 to 1813. The United Grand Lodge, 1813 and on. The Grand Lodge of Ireland, 1724 and on. The Grand Lodge of Scotland, 1736 and on. And from the pre-Grand Lodge era of lodges of England, Ireland, and or Scotland. Unfortunately, for the historian, this list does not signify six or seven different but pure forms. The ritual of the original Grand Lodge changed as it flowed through many years after 1717. The Grand Lodges of the Ancients and Moderns both made alterations in rituals so that rival members of each body found it impossible to make themselves known Masonically in the other. Ireland and Scotland were and are as different as Pennsylvania and California. From pre-Grand Lodges, members came to this country to form themselves into lodges without warrant or charters, as was the custom in early days. A dozen men bringing what they remembered of the ritual that they heard when they were made to form a lodge would naturally include in their ritual a little of one original source, some phrases from another beginning, a paragraph from a third wellspring, and so on. The Mother Grand Lodge ritual, 1717 to 1753, was not the ritual of the United Grand Lodge which came into existence in 1813, when the two parts of the original Mother Grand Lodge, Ancients and Moderns, again came together. The United Grand Lodge, or Grand Lodge of Reconciliation, formed its ritual from the best of the divergent rituals of the Ancients and the Moderns. Thus, lodges in this country which received ritual in any and all states of purity or impurity from either of these several sources would differ decidedly each from the other. Come we now to the spread of Masonry in the 13 colonies and later through the 48 states, territories, and the District of Columbia. To write even one paragraph of Masonic history of ritual is in so many subdivisions would make this bulletin unreadably long. But a few highlights may be noted from our primary American sources of ritual, in one way or another, all other American Grand Lodges, in part at least, received their work from Massachusetts, which at first sent forth what must have been at least an approximation of the work of the original Mother Grand Lodge, though her ritual today is derived from both moderns and ancients, Pennsylvania and Virginia both giving forth individual variants of a combination of modern and ancient, and North Carolina, almost purely modern. In 1915, Dean Roscoe Pound showed how variations were the next groups of states which received their rituals from the first four American sources. He developed that Maine derived from Massachusetts since the fusion, Vermont derived from the Grand Lodge of the Ancients in Massachusetts before the fusion, Ohio derived from Massachusetts, from Connecticut, a strictly modern jurisdiction, and from Pennsylvania. Indiana derived from Ohio and Kentucky, which later represents Virginia after the fusion. Michigan derived from the ancient Grand Lodge of Canada and from New York, which, since the Revolution, was a strictly ancient jurisdiction. Kentucky derived from Virginia. Tennessee derived from North Carolina, a purely modern jurisdiction. Alabama derived from North Carolina, from South Carolina, and from Tennessee, thus representing Virginia and North Carolina. Louisiana derived from South Carolina, from Pennsylvania, and from France. Florida derived from Georgia and from South Carolina. Missouri from Pennsylvania and Tennessee, representing therefore the fusion in Pennsylvania and the modern masonry of North Carolina. Illinois derived from Kentucky and so represents Virginia. And the District of Columbia derived from Maryland, a fusion of modern masonry from Massachusetts and from England direct, with the ancient masonry from Pennsylvania and from Virginia. The further west we go, the more we find a mixture of sources complicated rather than simplified by such matters as the splitting of the Grand Lodge of Dakota into the Grand Lodge of South Dakota and North Dakota when these two states were formed, and the formation of the Grand Lodge of California, which drew its work from many sources. California Lodge No. 13 of the District of Columbia was formed for the purpose of carrying masonry to the Golden Gate at the time of the Gold Rush. That lodge is now number 1 on the California Grand Lodge Register. But California's ritual is not more similar to the District of Columbia working than that of any other state, since the District Lodge was but one of several which formed the Grand Lodge of California. There have been certain unifying influences, the Baltimore Convention of 1843, the conclusions of which were adopted in whole or in part by several American grand jurisdictions, and the work of Bob Morris and his conservators, which, despite its chilly reception by many grand jurisdictions, undoubtedly left its impression on American ritual. A third unifying influence has been the tremendous impress made on almost all American jurisdictions by Thomas Smith Webb and Jeremy Cross, plainly evident in the exoteric paragraphs printed in many state monitors or manuals. A fourth has been the honest desire and strenuous efforts of many grand lodges through district deputies, grand lecturers, schools of instruction, and similar machinery to preserve what they have in its supposedly ancient perfection. But by the time these latter were in operation, ritual was more or less fixed because of the reverence of the average Mason for what he is taught and his fierce resentment of any material change in that which he learns. Ritual and degree form, ceremonies and practices, usages and customs continue to be what he believes them to have been from time immemorial, even when sober fact shows that they have an antiquity of, in all probability, less than 200 years. For the benefit of those Masons to whom divergence of ritual is not the less distressing thing, but that it is understandable, it may be said that most authorities agree that it is really not a matter of great moment. All over the world, Freemasonry teaches the same truths, offers the same spiritual comfort, creates and continues the same fraternal bond in non-essentials, variety, in essentials, and in unity, might have been written of Masonry. It matters little how we wear the apron in a given degree, so be it that it is worn with honor. The method of giving a sign or a pass matters much less than that of what we do in understanding. While Freemasonry continues to observe and revere those few landmarks which are undisputed everywhere, those which Joseph Fort Newton says are the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, and the hope of life everlasting, it becomes of less moment that different men in different times and different localities have found more than one way to phrase and to teach the ancient varieties of the old, old craft. So there you have some ritual differences. You know, I found it really interesting when I was first raised as a Master Mason, and the first thing I did was I went to the first Master Mason degree I ever saw outside of Illinois was actually in California when I saw my brother Rob Lewis raised to the Sublime degree. And what an incredible difference that was. I had been tried at the door to get into the meeting. It was really cool, though, and to see the different variations is often amazing. I love the fact that North Carolina is almost purely modern. There is a wave of excitement over original modern masonry ritual, regardless of what some people might say doesn't really mean anything. It's all just assigned and whatever. But it is so interesting from a historical point of view to know where we come from, and that really it's not so much the attachment to the way things are, right? Because that's kind of a lesser-minded thing. It should be that there are a plethora of different versions, but as long as they all kind of work together to form a common agreed-upon stance, then you're considered a regular lodge. I think we've talked about it in the past. The North American Conference of Grand Masters some years ago decided to look at all of the landmarks of Freemasonry and decide which of them was relevant. Now, there's several different versions of this. Each state has their own set of kind of rules. But at the time, that committee established really that there were just three things that constitute a regular Grand Lodge. And that was the Hiramic legend, the belief in a supreme being, and I think the last one is something to do with either the immortality of the soul or something along those lines. I can't remember offhand, but they have a great article, several of them actually, on the Grand Lodge of British Columbia and Yukon's website, which is freemasonry.bcy.ca, a wonderful repository of knowledge. You know, Mackey lists 25 landmarks that should be the same or whatever. A cool quote I found there is, it says, in 1923, Melvin M. Johnson, past Grand Master of Massachusetts, wrote in the July 1923 issue of The Builder, page 195, that the landmarks are those essentials of Freemasonry without any of which it would no longer be Freemasonry. Albert Pike is cited in an excerpt from the Proceedings of the Masonic Veterans Association District of Columbia, found in a research pamphlet number 20, Wisconsin Grand Lodge Committee on Masonic Research, 1924, page 147, as stating, quote, "There is no common agreement in regard to what are and what are not landmarks. That has never been definitely settled." Pike makes a similar statement in the Iowa Grand Lodge Proceedings in 1888. So, just some history on that for you. Before we get into this week's Masonic Minute, I want to take a few minutes and go over something happening really soon. South Pasadena, Masonic Lodges, MasonicCon 2019. So, this is another education symposium. This time we're on the West Coast. It's going to be outstanding. It is a 3-day event. So, if you can't hang for 3 days, I don't know what to say. It's going to be pretty cool. We'll see who's last man standing Sunday. But it'll be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And check-in starts on Friday at 5:30 p.m., 7 p.m. reception, 8 p.m. is a welcome address, and then at 8:30 p.m. is the festive board. Not just any festive board, a pop culture festive board. It says this year, the South Pasadena Masonic Lodges Masonic Con is opening with a 7-course festive board on the very first night. The ceremony will not only be open to Masons of other lodges, but to non-Mason gentlemen and ladies who may enjoy the talk, laughter, and fellowship that flourishes on such a ceremonial occasion. We are not here to be silent and grim, sitting on a bench and staring across the wall. We are here to enjoy good food, drink, sing, and partake in the joys of frivolous merrymaking. For on this night, we celebrate the arrival of South Pasadena's first MasonicCon weekend and will toast those unique brothers who contributed to the betterment of our society, to the Masonic pop culture icons we hold dear. It's going to be an amazing night. Just that first night is killer. Day two, gosh, I'm going to give you just a brief rundown. So 9 a.m. check-in, 10 a.m. Angel Millar. Also at 10 a.m. there's going to be a screening of Fight Club. Why? The duality of man. That's why. 20-year anniversary of that movie. I don't know if you guys can believe that. Now I feel old. At 11, we've got a speaker, Mike Jarza, back. He's going to do The Hero's Journey in Freemasonry, which is adapted from a speech he wrote, and he's just awesome. I've had the privilege on seeing what he's talked about in the past, and you guys are going to love it. At noon, Adam Kendall is going to go on. Then we've got a 1 o'clock lunch. 2 o'clock, Joe Wages on the symbolic degrees of the Illuminati. What? It's going to be awesome. We've got then Charlie Fisher talking on Masonic conspiracies. You're going to see on the schedule, if you go to the website, MasonicCon 4 p.m., The Word by me. Now, that's going to get cut. I'm not going to be talking on The Word. I'm actually going to be doing a lot of the moderating for the panel discussions after the screenings. So that's going to be, I'm going to focus on that. We're going to have great questions, great conversation, take questions. So I hope you guys all start thinking about questions and things on the films that we're going to watch. And then at 5, again, we have the QA panel screening. Then we're going to 5:30, we've got our keynote speaker. Who's the keynote speaker? Arturo de Hoyos on esoteric masonry. That's going to be a killer keynote speech. So I would really recommend everybody at least be there for that keynote speaker if you can't make the stuff earlier in the day. Then at 6:30 is the dinner break. It's going to be a two-hour dinner break. And then at 8:30, the screening of the world premiere, I think. Illuminated. The True History of the Illuminati, a new film by Johnny Royal, and Joe Wages was a major part of this film. And then I'm going to moderate at 10 o'clock. I'm going to moderate the panel discussion with Johnny Royal and a few other brothers. We're going to ask questions. We're going to grill them. We're going to talk to them about this and how they made the movie and all that. And then at 10:30, we're going to go into a screening of an episode of Sacred Steel. And I'll do a panel discussion on that too, a moderated discussion at 11:15 p.m. Yeah, it's late, guys. It's going to be awesome. A full day. If you've ever been to a comic book convention or Comic-Con in San Diego, you know how this runs. You kind of pick and choose what you want to go to. You don't get to go to it all sometimes, and that's just the price you pay. But there's something for everybody. Something is going on all day, even late. So if you work till 6 p.m., or you work till 5 and you can't make Saturday, well, guess what? From 5:30 all the way to 11 p.m., there's still 6 hours of content for you. You're not going to want to miss it. And that's just day two. What about day three? What? Yes, there's day three. 9:30, doors open. A little bit later, you get to sleep in an extra half hour. 10 a.m., we're going to screen Mysteries of the Knight Templar. Then there's going to be a panel Q&A with Tim Hogan. That's right, Timothy Hogan. Then you're going to see at 11:30, we've got Brother Brian Simmons. Brian Simmons, the architect of Masonic Con in Attleboro, Massachusetts, the largest Masonic convention to date in the United States, is going to come out and he's doing his premiere presentation. You don't want to miss that, right? Then at 12:30, we've got a panel discussion again, the value and importance of Masonic research, and that'll be with De Hoyos, Kendall, and Wages. And I want to say that the schedule may get moved around just a little bit, but you're going to see all this stuff. And then 1:30, closing remarks by Brother Dago Rodriguez, the architect behind this. And at 1:45, the conference ends, and we all fly on our merry way home, and then I get on an airplane, and I fly 4 hours home, and then I add 2 hours, so I'm traveling into the future, and then it's back to work on Monday and putting together the next episode of Whence Came You. So 3 days, what's it going to cost you? They've got two tickets. They have general admission and executive pass. The general admission, you get access to all the lectures, all the screenings and Q&As, all the vendors. You get lunch on Saturday. You get the reception on Friday. You get the festive board. You get a MasonicCon shot glass. And again, it's 3 days of stuff. They have an executive pass, and you get all that other stuff. Plus, a pin, so you get a lapel pin, you get a Masonic coin, a hat, and a limited edition MasonicCon one sheet. So, All of that stuff is there on the website, MasonicCon.com. I want you to check it out. Check out the schedule. I'll post the video premiere for it on our Facebook page. But this is it. This is a really big conference. There are four things you should go to every year, and it's based on my own experience. And those four things are MasonicCon at Attleboro, Camp Masonry in Ohio, EsoterraCon, which was just in Manassas, Virginia. And, you know, that's the first year for this, but I can already tell you, I'm sure this is going to be that fourth thing, those four events that you want to plan on going to every year if you can make it. Again, MasonicCon.com. Let's hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison for the Masonic Minute for this week, right now.
A few years ago, at Missouri's Grand Lodge session, the Grand Secretary asked me, with approval from the Grand Master, to take some photographs of the tiled Grand Lodge meeting. We held the meeting in a large conference center jam-packed with over 1,000 brothers. As I walked around the room trying to figure out the best angles for photographs, it became apparent I wouldn't be able to get a good photo from the convention floor. Fortunately, there was an office area above with a bank of draped windows overlooking the cavernous meeting room. That, I figured, would give me the best vantage point for the shot the Grand Secretary wanted. I hauled my equipment upstairs and entered the office. There, I peeked out of each window to determine the best angle for my impending work of art. I selected the appropriate window, opened the drapes just enough to stick my head and camera through, knelt, and started snapping pictures. When I lowered my camera, I noticed a flurry of activity on my end of the room. Right below me, brothers were waving their arms and pointing at me. Some were even heading toward the door. Momentarily, the meeting stopped. The brothers had exposed a Cowan in their midst. And it was me! Being a man of decisive action, I decided it was time to make a quick exit. Feet don't fail me now. I grabbed my stuff, whirled around, and prepared to make myself scarce. Too late. As I stood up, the office door flew open. There, holding his angled rod in front of his body with both hands, legs planted apart, silent and ready for battle, of the Grand Percivant. Do I need to mention it was an uncomfortable moment for me? I didn't know the man, but it was pretty obvious he was a brother. As a few others began to show up behind him, I introduced myself and told him what I was up to. It didn't take too long to convince him I was legitimate, and the crisis quickly ended. A few smiles even broke out. I suppose there are some things to be learned from the incident. Like, for example, we probably should have announced that the photos were being taken. Mainly, however, I learned some brothers apparently have eyes in the back of their heads, since they were all facing away from me when I took the pictures. Although I edited the Missouri Freemason magazine at the time, I never published the photo, but it now hangs in the Masonic Museum at the Masonic Complex in Columbia. That Grand Percivant was elected Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of Missouri in September 2016. We've gotten to know each other pretty well, and every once in a while, we share a smile, recalling the way we met. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
As usual, a huge thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Harrison for putting these things together for us. It doesn't get better than that. I love the storytelling. I love the content. If you love this stuff, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, hover over More, click on the bookstore, and you'll see links to all of Brother Harrison's books that he's published that you can find right there. They take you to Amazon to pick those up. In some cases, they may go to the Missouri Lodge of Research. If you like these segments, please let Steve Harrison know. Tweet him or find him on Facebook and bombard him with thank yous. I can't thank him enough for what he's done to inspire me and to all of you. Go to our YouTube channel where we have all of his videos there hosted as well. You can subscribe, so anytime a new one comes out, you can get it right in your email or you'll get a notification on your phone. Boom, click it. You can watch the new video. I've received a lot of questions. They say, hey, can we make a playlist of all the Masonic minutes? And can we run that all day at our Masonic event or our candidate day or whatever it is? Yes, yes, do that. Please do that. It would be an honor. I'm sure Steve feels the same way. So, yeah, emphatically, yes. Now, let's get into the next piece for this week. Recently, I've been posting on the Texas Freemasonry's Facebook group, asking poignant questions, trying to do that in the most intelligent, surgical way I know how to get decent responses without the bickering. And I recently posted, by request, I asked about dressing up for Lodge and why that matters and perhaps why it's okay to dress down for Lodge also. Like, it depends on your Lodge's culture. So, in true fashion, illustrious Brother Creason hopped in that same thread, and he listed a little bit about why he dresses the way he does and his perspective. And then what he later did the next day, actually, was he gave us a piece for the Midnight Freemasons, which was an answer to my question, but expounded for the actual blog post. So what I want to do first is read you the post that I wrote on Texas Masonry's Facebook group. Now, this group has about 10,500 members and has several great posts every single day. Guys like Robert Marshall, just to name one guy off the top of my head who just sticks out like a sore thumb for somebody who's all about that education. So I said, day three, I had posted these, you know, in a successive number of days. And the topic was dress. Don't comment unless you read below. Quote, it is the internal qualifications, not the external, that should recommend a man to be a Mason. End quote. Illinois Monitor, 2019. It's often said that because of this line of ritual, outward appearance should be no indicator of quality or intellect. However, the word qualification refers to the internal slash external character attributes, not your clothing choice. The argument for using this line to escape formal dress is not a valid one, and it's not within the context of the ritual meaning, so let's stop saying that. What I'm saying is, stop saying the internal versus external when we're talking about dress. It's not a valid excuse, right? So instead, let's ask the deeper question. And I went on to say, there's been much said about proper dress in Lodge, but what is proper dress for Lodge? Some would have us believe it's always a tux and tails, whilst others maintain a business suit standard. While others still maintain that it doesn't matter at all, sweatpants and t-shirts. While I personally cringe at this, in my own opinion, each lodge sets its own standard. Period. You'll get no judgment from me. Just know that when I come visiting a lodge, I come in a suit, even if I'm surrounded by something not as formal. It's no secret that some schools have dress codes, jobs have uniforms, but what is the uniform of a Freemason? The Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania released a document titled The Exemplar in 1985, which outlines what at that time was said the law was. Quote, he must wear an apron tied around the waist over his suit or tuxedo coat, but under a tailcoat to be properly displayed. White gloves must be worn when required, particularly by the officers of the lodge. The lack of white gloves by a Mason otherwise properly dressed stands out as an easily noted case of un-Masonic dress. Jewels must be displayed in a proper manner. He continues, a Mason should endeavor to wear a dark suit when attending his lodge and make sure it is clean and pressed. A Mason should regard his dress at lodge to be as benefits the wearer. To attend the lodge is a privilege not all men can enjoy. A Mason therefore should dress in good taste, always to wear such attire as shows respect to the fraternity, the lodge, and the dignity of Freemasonry." End quote. So seeing this, how then do we reconcile anything less? It is, of course, up to each individual grand jurisdiction to delegate how their brothers are to dress or not. When we think of original purpose for Freemasonry, what would our guild brothers have worn? Well, not a suit, I can tell you that, but perhaps during the Enlightenment, likely some fancy dress, and today, with the pomp and circumstance, well, it all depends. Want to know how to officially dress for lodge? Ask your Grand Master. As an aside, I've never seen a picture publicized of Freemasons in sweatpants. Discuss with civility, no judgment. And I listed a couple links there, articles that addressed dress. One by John Bizik, or Bizik. He's the education chair in Kentucky in 2014, and he wrote a great article. I'll link that in our show notes as well. And also, I'll link back to the Exemplar for those interested in reading that text. But it was put together with a meme when I posted this that says there's nothing wrong with overalls. So take that how you want. But Todd Creason had this to say: "Why do I dress for lodge?" The topic of dress for lodge keeps coming up. I made a comment on a discussion our editor Robert Johnson started the other night on social media. I thought I'd expand on that remark a bit. When I joined the fraternity, I didn't own a jacket. I'd been wearing a shirt and tie to work for years, but I'd never worn a jacket. I was in my late 30s, and I didn't even know my size. I went and bought one days after I was raised. It was the first of many new experiences I had when I became a Master Mason. Part of becoming a Master Mason is learning to see ourselves differently. I've become something different over time as a Mason, something better than I was. I didn't join the lodge to stay the same, I joined to change. I didn't join the lodge to be accepted as I was, I joined the lodge out of a desire to learn to be something more. It was the culture of Masons in my lodge to dress for degree work and special events, and so that's what I do. That's what I've done since the beginning. We dress alike to show we're brothers. We dress because we're supposed to be leaders and examples in our community. We dress to show respect for the due solemnity and importance of the work that we're doing. We dress to impress upon our new members that what they are becoming a part of is very different from what they've known. We dress so that when others in the community see us coming and going from the lodge, they know we must be doing something important. I've seen a number of young men dress in that jacket and tie for the first time since then. I've taught a few of them how to tie a tie. In fact, that first jacket I bought somehow shrank over time, probably all the dinners, and I gave it to a new member to wear. I've seen other Masons do the same thing. When I joined the York Rite chapter, I didn't have a red jacket, which is customarily worn in my area, and I didn't really have the cash to lay out at that time to buy one. My good friend Sean McBride was traveling with the Grand Chapter and found a jacket in his travels for me to wear. That meant a lot to me at that time that he'd thought about me. I was able to go to meetings properly dressed, like my brothers in chapter. Now, a few people in that first discussion said that they can't dress for lodge because they go right from work to lodge. So do I. So do many more of us in my lodge. You know how many times I've changed at work before going to a lodge? Or changed at the lodge when I got there? I wish I had a dollar for every time I changed into a suit in the bathroom of a funeral home prior to a Masonic funeral rite. I often leave my jacket and my apron at the lodge so I don't have to run home for them when I'm pressed for time. And I'm not the only one. You know what you see in cars parked outside my lodge on a Royal Arch chapter night? Masons walking in carrying their suit bags. There's a difference between can't dress and don't want to dress for lodge. Now, whether or not you dress for lodge should be up to the culture of your lodge. We don't dress for regularly stated meetings. Some lodges do. In fact, I just visited one that wears a full tuxedo and gloves. I had Midnight Freemasons Greg Knott and Darren Laners with me that night, and we all felt a little underdressed in our suits. But it was a wonderful evening, and that lodge had one of the best evenings and festive boards I've ever enjoyed in the lodge. Some lodges wear blue suits, some wear black suits. My lodge just wants our members to wear a jacket and tie. I usually wear the best jacket, vest, and pants I can find in my closet that are free of stains. Those pieces usually belonging to about three different suits. I think a lot of the conflict over dress is about lodges having a tradition to dress in a certain way, and a few members disregarding it. The members get upset, and those that have disregarded the traditional standard of dress set by the lodge get in a huff and say that they shouldn't be judged by how they dress, and they don't have time to dress, and it's too expensive, and the internal, not the external qualifications of man, etc. At least, that's what I see during these debates, almost without exception. I've never really understood that. I knew the members of my lodge dressed up. I'd seen it before I joined. I looked forward to doing the same and knew I'd have to buy some clothes after I was raised. If I had a problem with dressing up, I certainly wouldn't have joined my lodge because I knew full well they dressed up. Masonry is a tradition. Each lodge has its own unique identity and culture. By all means, if your lodge has a custom and tradition to dress in a certain way, either for all their events or certain events, respect it. Freemasonry, and your lodge in particular, shouldn't have to change to accommodate you. The idea is that you're going to change as a result of Freemasonry. Isn't that why we joined? Todd E. Creason. Well, there you have it. I rather enjoyed Todd's take on the matter. I think he dismisses certain excuses and at the same time reinforces the idea of your lodge's individuality on how they operate. I think that's very important. I would almost consider it the final word on the matter, to be honest. If you have never been to the Midnight Freemasons, well, I don't know what to tell you. I talk about it every week, so head on over there Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays for fresh content. Every Friday from now until the end of summer, I think Todd E. Creason's got a piece ready for you all, and I'm just posting great articles on Mondays and Wednesdays for the rest of you, and we've got some great stuff coming up, including Steve Harrison. I've got one from Mike Hambrick that we're going to be posting soon. I've got a great one from a guest contributor, Brother Kevin Homan, on the Esotericon event that just happened just a little bit ago. And so, it's a great site, great research, check it out. And in closing, I just want to remind you once more, head on over to YouTube and click the subscribe button for our YouTube channel. Share it with your friends, share it with your families, those interested in the craft. I want to thank you all once more for everything you do to make this show possible. All of our contributors, our producers, our fellows, you all are amazing. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Until next time, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.